If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
All right, picture this one. You're a defense attorney facing a mountain of evidence that your client killed her boyfriend. And your best strategy is to convince a jury that there's a massive conspiracy involving multiple law enforcement officers and a dog and other first responders and crime labs. And yeah, that's essentially what happened in a Massachusetts courtroom this week. And while the defense presented their witnesses, the fundamental evidence against Karen Reed remains unchanged. Welcome back. Be sure to press subscribe and let us know what you think about the case and what's going on in the comment section, wherever you are viewing us on YouTube or X. Press subscribe, and wherever you're listening to us on the podcast platform, please hit subscribe there right now before you forget, so you don't miss out on any of our coverage on this or the many cases we cover for you here at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. My name is Tony Bruschi. Thanks for hanging out and, I don't know what to call this anymore. Absorbing the information, enduring the information. I think it's like morbid curiosity at this point in the Karen Reed trial of what is going on in it. So, Wednesday, June 4th, it brought some interesting testimony to Karen Reed's retrial that the defense hopes will create reasonable doubt. But when you examine what actually happened, we saw witnesses' testimony that raises as many questions about the witnesses themselves as it does about the prosecution's case. The whole thing got cut short when Judge Beverly Cannone suspended proceedings due to extreme heat, canceling Thursday's session entirely. Yes, at this day and age, they're canceling. I wonder if they cancel like all of court in Massachusetts, like all summer, like from here on out. Is it just we're not coming back till October or August or something? I don't know. For those just tuning in, Karen Reed is accused of killing her boyfriend, Boston police officer John O'Keefe, by striking him with her SUV outside fellow officer Brian Elbert's house in Canton, Massachusetts on January 29th, 2022. The prosecution alleges that she was intoxicated, struck O'Keefe after dropping him off, and left him to die in a blizzard. The defense claims O'Keefe was beaten to death inside the Elbert home and that Reed is being framed by corrupt law enforcement officers. Wednesday's star witness was Brian Lucky Loughran, a Canton Department of Public Works snowplow driver whose truck Frankentruck was equipped with extremely bright lights. Lucky testified that during his 2:45 a.m. pass down Fairview Road, he saw nothing where O'Keefe's body was later discovered. He also spotted a Ford Edge SUV parked in front of the Elbert House at 3:30 a.m., which he said was unusual since the Elberts typically didn't park vehicles on the street. Now, the defense is treating this testimony as a smoking gun. That destroys the prosecution's timeline. They argue that if O'Keefe was allegedly struck at 12:45 a.m. and he lay there until 6 a.m., Lucky should have seen the body. But there are several important factors to consider here. First, this was during an active blizzard with heavy snow falling continuously. And by 2:45, the body laying in accumulating snow, especially one positioned in a way that might not be immediately obvious to a driver focused on plowing operations, could reasonably be missed. Snow removal operators are concentrating on road conditions and snow removal, not conducting forensic examinations of every yard that they pass. Second, and this is crucial, Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan exposed significant issues with Lucky's testimony during cross-examination. Brennan highlighted multiple inconsistencies between Lucky's current account and his previous statements to investigators. Lucky couldn't maintain a consistent timeline about when he admitted to returning to the area, first saying it was 5:30 a.m., then claiming 6:15 a.m. More problematically, when Brennan pressed Lucky about his exposure to media coverage of the case, Lucky admitted he has been following it extensively. "With all due respect, sir, I don't live under a rock. It's all over social media and the news. You can't avoid it," he testified. This admission is significant because it means Lucky's testimony isn't the uncontaminated eyewitness account the defense wants the jury to believe. He's been exposed to theories, speculation, and detailed coverage of the case and taking selfies with a lot of people as well over the last 3 years. The Ford Edge that Lucky noticed at 3:30 a.m. is interesting, but hardly the conspiracy evidence the defense suggests. During social gatherings, especially ones involving alcohol, it's common for vehicles to be parked in unusual locations when driveways fill up or when people are arranging rides. The defense wants this suggested mysterious nighttime activity, or wants to suggest this mysterious nighttime activity, but it could be simply someone who stayed later than others or needed to retrieve something from their car, or who knows. Or it could have been on a completely different street. If you watch Lucky, you get what I'm talking about. Lucky also didn't notice the giant red dumpsters that were in all of the driveways. Brennan pointed that out also on cross. So kind of big things to, not remember. The other key witness was Katrina, I'm going to screw up her name, Katrina is what we're calling her, and I do apologize for the name. A Canton pharmacist who was at the Waterfall Bar and Grill that evening. Katrina testified about observing what she described as a loving interaction between Reed and O'Keefe, including a forehead kiss that struck her as sweet. She also described John O'Keefe as being very happy about his daughter's acceptance to private school. However, Katrina's testimony also confirmed that both Reed and O'Keefe had been drinking heavily that night. Regardless of whether their mood was celebratory alcohol consumption, it's kind of central to the prosecution's case about impaired judgment and reaction time. Additionally, Katrina witnessed enough tension and drama to remember specific details 3 years later, including O'Keefe shouting something towards a group containing the Elberts and Brian Higgins, with Chris Elbert having to physically restrain Higgins, allegedly. Katrina also testified about Jennifer McCabe's insistence that Reed came with her, describing McCabe as saying, "You're coming with me, you're coming with me." Well, Reed responded with confusion. The defense presents this as evidence of manipulation, but it could equally represent someone trying to help an intoxicated person, make it, safe decisions about transportation and where to go next, like that. Not a weird conspiracy that they're planning before anything even happens. Anyway, The defense showed surveillance footage capturing the tension between O'Keefe and the others, but this actually raises questions that don't necessarily help their case. If there was an underlying conflict, it supports the prosecution's narrative that the evening involved alcohol-fueled tensions that could lead to poor decisions and tragic consequences. What's important to understand is that none of Wednesday's testimony addresses the core physical evidence in the case. Karen Reed's SUV sustained damage consistent with striking a person. John O'Keefe's injuries were consistent with being struck by a vehicle. Reed made statements suggesting she might have hit something with her car. Her behavior the next morning, returning to the scene, is consistent with someone who suspected they might have caused an accident while intoxicated. Her own words. The defense's conspiracy theory requires believing that multiple law enforcement officers spontaneously decided to murder John O'Keefe and frame Karen Reed. Again, this would necessitate split-second coordination among numerous people. Perfect execution of a complex plan and absolute secrecy maintained by everyone involved for over 3 years despite intense scrutiny. When you lay it out logistically, the implausibility becomes apparent. Consider what the defense is asking the jury to accept. Brian Elbert and others allegedly killed O'Keefe inside the house, then moved his body outside, positioned it to simulate a car accident, coordinate their stories perfectly, anticipate that Reed would return the next morning and somehow manipulate all subsequent investigations. Every person at the party would need to be complicit, and every investigator afterward would need to be either incompetent or corrupt. Compare that to the prosecution's straightforward explanation. An intoxicated couple had tensions after a night of heavy drinking. Reed dropped O'Keefe off, but due to impairment or anger or both, struck him with her vehicle. Recognizing what happened, she left the scene. The next morning, consumed by guilt and worry, she returned to look for him. Which one is more logical? This explanation aligns with the physical evidence, doesn't require elaborate conspiracies, and matches patterns of behavior seen in similar cases involving alcohol-related incidents. It's tragic, but it's believable, and it's supported by multiple forms of evidence. Not, he kissed her on the forehead, and the prosecution's approach throughout the case has been methodical and evidence-focused. Rather than getting distracted by conspiracy, they've consistently returned to the physical facts and Karen Reed's own statements and actions. Brennan's cross-examination of Lucky Lauren demonstrated this approach, systematic addressing the witnesses' inconsistencies and potential biases from media exposure. What we're witnessing is a defense team employing a common strategy in cases with strong evidence against their client. Create enough confusion and alternative theories that some jurors might doubt the prosecution's case. They're hoping that if they can raise questions about minor details, the jury might overlook the substantial evidence pointing to Reed's guilt. The defense expanded their case significantly for this retrial from 2 days in the first trial to potentially 2 weeks now. However, more witnesses don't necessarily mean a stronger case, especially when those witnesses have credibility issues or when their testimony doesn't actually contradict the central evidence. Judge Cannone noted that the trial remains ahead of schedule, despite the heat-related suspension, suggesting that proceedings are moving efficiently. The heat wave suspension gives both sides time to prepare, but it doesn't change the fundamental dynamics of the case. As the trial prepares to resume Friday, hopefully, the prosecution maintains several advantages. They have physical evidence that the defense cannot explain away. They have Reed's own statements and behaviors that support their narrative. They've demonstrated that defense witnesses have potential credibility problems and that their testimony doesn't undermine the core case. Karen Reed faces second-degree murder, manslaughter, while operating under the influence and leaving the scene charges. First trial ended in a hung jury, indicating that some jurors found the conspiracy theories pervasive while others focused on the evidence. This retrial gives the prosecution an opportunity to refine their presentation and address the defense's theories more directly. The challenge for any jury in a high-profile case like this is separating social media narratives and public opinion from courtroom evidence. The defense has been effective at generating sympathy for Reed and suspicion about law enforcement through media coverage, but courtroom decisions must be based on evidence presented under oath and subject to cross-examination. Looking ahead, the prosecution will likely continue their methodical approach, addressing each defense theory with facts and evidence. They'll work to demonstrate that while the defense can create confusion about peripheral details, they can't provide credible explanations for the central evidence. Defense? Well, they face a challenge of presenting enough witnesses and theories to maintain their conspiracy narrative without having those witnesses undermine their case through inconsistencies or credibility problems. Lucky's admission of extensive media exposure illustrates that risk. Where's it going to go? Well, only time will tell. What do you think about how the case went today? Tell me in the comments section. I know it was only a half day, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on those two witnesses. Be nice to have a little break, a little breather for a day. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to this or watching this so you don't miss any of our coverage. And again, please let us know in the comments what your thoughts are on the case. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.